I am live. All right, we're going to sit here and wait for some people to fill in the room. 7 p.m. on October 3rd, and we're ready for the live stream. This is Chris Whalen, CPA, and this is our Tax and Accounting and Business Ask Me Anything live stream. We're just going to wait a few minutes for the room to fill up a little bit. If you're here, say hello. And let me know if you can hear me and see me. Did you find it? I don't know. Let me see. Neil is here. How are you, Neil? Thank you. Oh, you're in the app. You're actually on the web with YouTube. You want to be on the in the YouTube app. Where is it?
Tell people that.
Yeah. There you go. Hey, Neil, how are you? Jim Whalen is here. I think Jim Whalen is going to be a guest on my interview program in the next few weeks. So everyone be sure to look out for that. Let me know, Neil and Jim, if you can hear me okay. You have the YouTube app on your phone? Yeah, that should be good. Excellent. Thank you, Jim. We'll get started. Hopefully, the room will fill up a little bit and we'll get some questions answered. And I have a bunch of questions I was sent ahead of time by people who might want to watch later. So I'm going to hit a bunch of those too while we're here. Anthony Love's in the room. Thank you. We're starting to build up a real crowd here. Nick Zinner, thanks for coming. Excellent, Nick. Thank you. If you have any questions initially, guys, you can start shooting me a question, no problem, because this will be available after the fact. I'm sure more people will watch it once it's saved after the live stream. Give me one second. All right. Nick, how's business, my friend? I'm sure you've been busier this summer than you thought you would be. All right, it's a great question. Nick Zinner, a client of mine, asked about 1099s. And the first thing you want to do, if you're going to be paying a vendor more than $600, and this is not an employee of yours, but a vendor, you want to get a form W-9 completed by them before you pay them anything. The W-9 will get their name or company name and their social security number or their federal ID number, and you let them know if you're going to pay them more than $600, they will be getting a 1099 at the end of the year. It's very important to protect yourself and get the W-9 completed before you pay anybody. Hope, Nick, does that answer your question? And they're due January 31st. So if you want me to do them, you just need to get me the data, name, address, and ID number or social and the grand total that you pay them. And we do many, many 1099s here. So we would just get them in our batch process and get them done on time for you by January 31st. Hope that answered your question. Sure, you can ask for the W-9 afterwards. I mean, they should expect that you would want to give them a 1099 and comply with the law. So you would want to tell them that, oh, I never issued a 1099. We'd need to, even if it's a prior year, and ask for it. Most companies, reputable companies, have a W-9 completed and signed that they just send out a copy to everybody. So yes, I would ask for it right away. All right. Any other questions in the room? I can start going over some of the questions that I got ahead of time. All right, I'm going to start my first important item. Thank you, Catherine. Catherine's in the room. Appreciate it. Thanks for letting me know. Catherine, if you have any specific questions, let me know. Lee Merendino, thank you very much. Lee, I was going to talk about this, the SALT and the state and local tax deduction limitations that were imposed. And a lot of people in the high tax states like California, New York, and New Jersey had a rude awakening when it came to their itemized deductions, that their state and local taxes were maxed out at 10,000. And there was a lot of fake news out there where they were saying, oh, it's going to lower the housing prices in these states, and it's Trump is hurting people in these states. But that's really only a very small piece of the tax code changes. And you really need to look overall at what happens to your tax return and net tax due when you implement all of the rules. And 95 to 98 of my clients all did much better. The rest really broke even. There were very, very few people. I have people who lost $35,000 of itemized deductions and were still okay. So I like the new law. The other components to it, with some things we'll go over here tonight about the qualified business income deduction. But overall, I see it as a net gain for lower income, middle income, and businesses. Yes, we've seen a lot of the news about, oh, the rich are getting a tax break. Well, everyone's gotten a tax break, but the relative amount that the rich have saved as a percentage is much, much lower than the lower income. And I've seen that, and I do all ranges of returns from $20,000 to $2 million. So Lee, did that answer your question? All right, I'm going to jump into a topic. I get a lot of questions ahead of time. One was about the new dependent rules. And a lot of parents with children came to realize that their dependent exemption of approximately $4,000 they had in 2017 and prior no longer was available for themselves or their children. And a lot of people got upset about that. But the standard deduction was increased and the tax rates were decreased. But you still can get a $500 dependent credit for a child over 17. And what the good part about this, which I would rather have how they changed it. Prior to 2018, there was a child tax credit, and it was $1,000 per child under 17 at the end of the year. But the income level was very low, and it hadn't been adjusted in a long time. I think it was about $110,000 for a married couple. So many middle-class people couldn't get the credit. So what Trump did is he increased the child tax credit to $2,000 per child, but increased the income level to $400,000. So yes, people may have, let's say you have two children in the past and you got $8,000 of exemptions. Well, that was only a tax deduction, right? But I would much rather have gotten rid of that tax deduction. And I'd much rather have $4,000 of real tax credit money. So many people who lost exemptions actually made out better by now being able to get the child tax credit. So it's a lot of things people don't realize, and you have to be very careful who prepares your taxes. A lot of these things are date driven in their systems. And if you go to a fast food kind of tax prep place, they forget these things. And so when the dates aren't included correctly, or Social Security is not put in correctly, these systems, TurboTax, H&R Block, can miss these things. So it's very important to be careful who you use to prepare taxes. And if you need someone that's really good, I know someone who has a CPA firm who can prepare your taxes, of course. I want to go over a little bit about, this is for business owners, about LLC misunderstandings. I know everyone bear with me, even if you're not a business owner, this could be important to you. Someday you might have a business, someday you might have an investment property. And a lot of times the advice is to form an LLC to do the business in or actually own the property within. So the first mistake people make is they think once I form an LLC, I have limited liability, that I almost have this umbrella protecting me. And that's not true. And it's very dangerous because if you are personally responsible, let's say that Jim and I have a bread company called Brothers Bread Company, and I'm driving our bread truck. All right. If I hit someone on the job in our bread truck, I'm still going to be personally sued. Nothing to do with my company because I personally have liability. Our company can get sued because I was working on the job in a company truck, but my brother Jim would be mostly shielded from liability if in that case, if we have an LLC. So remember, so if you're a landlord, for example, that if you didn't have an LLC, you would think, oh, you're responsible for the concrete pavement outside. Well, you still are. If you're the landlord with that role and you're the caretaker of the property, they would still come after you personally and they would totally be able to ignore the LLC. The most important thing to remember in business or with investment properties is to be properly insured. In my 32-year career now, I have never seen anyone, business or investment property owner, who was sued that had to come out of pocket if they had proper insurance. And remember, many lawsuits are frivolous and you want to have insurance. It's really legal fee protection. All right. So that's important to remember about LLCs. Any questions? Just give me a chat. I can see it right here on the right side here. Some other top questions that I get. There is still a New Jersey penalty for not having health insurance. So this applies to this year. So anyone who doesn't have coverage through a job or Medicaid or Medicare or through the exchange, they face a penalty of 2.5% of their household income or about $695 per adult, whichever is higher. So if you don't have health insurance, they're still going to get you some way when you do your tax return. So be careful if you don't have insurance and save for that. I want to go back a little bit to the discussion of, is it still worth it to buy a home? I get a lot of people who rent, they call me and they've been hearing all of this different news, the media talking about some of the negatives, as I said, about buying a home. And I have a lot of case studies, which I could send people, that it's much better to own instead of rent. There's no doubt, even with limitations, and it's very important to remember that even with these SALT deductions, if you're left with anything else tonight, you want to be left with the fact that the SALT deductions are not hurting people as much as the media has portrayed. Okay. Oh, good. We got some more people in the room. Everyone who came in, say hello. So I know you're here. That would be great. Now, the next topic I'm going to talk about is cryptocurrency. I get this question a lot. So people have heard about crypto and it's in the news all the time. And what's Bitcoin? And the most important thing to remember is that cryptocurrency is not really a currency. So it's not like US dollars or the euro. So if you own cryptocurrency and you exchange it for dollars, or if you exchange it for another type of cryptocurrency, you have to, that's a taxable event for you. So anyone listening to this now or later, if you have cryptocurrency transactions and you have not filed returns for that because you haven't gotten a 1099 for it, please don't take that advice. There are people out there saying, oh, they'll never know, but the IRS is getting a lot more information than you know, and they'll be able to send you a notice a few years from now or sooner that you haven't filed, and they're going to try to tax you on every dollar. So if they have a program now to bring people, you know, back out of the shadows to file a few past years returns. And I would take advantage of it. Joe D. Joe D is here. Hi, Joe D. Great. Let's talk. I want to talk about extensions. Now, I have a lot of extensions here to do. Those are my procrastinators. I call them. So they're all due October 15th. So those of my clients who are listening, who still haven't filed your return, I want you to turn off the computer and get me all the information tomorrow so I can get your return done on time. But the point of this section is just to talk about extensions, that on April 15th, everyone knows about filing for a six-month extension of your personal return. But remember, that's only to file the paper. It is not an extension to file or to pay the tax that's due. So even if you're coming to April 15th next year and you feel you might owe something, you need to come see me right away, preferably before my birthday, which is April Fool's Day. So even if you're not complete for 2019, I still can calculate a quick projection and we could pay something in, because the late filing penalties are a disaster. Okay, so keep that in mind. You cannot extend the time to pay your tax. And if you're self-employed, remember, you can't wait till April 15th. You have to pay quarterly or else you're also late paying. If you're not a W-2, you need to pay every quarter. So, and if you're confused about that, come see me. We work with a lot of business owners and we maintain their books. So every quarter we can tell them how much to pay to keep up and to not get behind. All right. So also for some business owners, I see a lot of them in the room here. I know they'll be watching this, that there were some changes to meals and entertainment in 2018. And people think that meals and entertainment were eliminated. And that's not true. They are two different things, right? So entertainment is Yankee tickets or spending money on hotels for clients, things like that. But going out to a business dinner or lunch, which is mostly what we consider meals and entertainment, is still deductible. It's still limited to 50%, but it's still deductible. So keep that in mind. I have a lot of clients who came to me this year and didn't have any meals. And they thought it was, so I had them go back and backtrack and get me that. It's usually a big deduction for people. I just got a question from Anthony Love. Anthony Love says, if you start reporting crypto now, do you think the IRS will give a pass on the back years? Hold on a second. I don't think that they will. I think if they catch you, you know, they're not going to give you a break on the back years. If they catch you, they're going to want the tax that's owed. So your best bet is to go back, look at all the crypto you've had. A lot of people don't realize that when you exchange cryptocurrency for another one, that's taxable. So the government knows this is very innocent. So, but you still want to go back as far back as you've had taxable events and amend your returns, because I think that crypto is not a normal situation. Remember, crypto is looking to circumvent the entire banking system in the world. So I think that the government and the IRS is taking that much more seriously than someone that might take an extra deduction for a meal. So I think this is a national security issue, they think of it. And so I would act accordingly, and I don't want to become an enemy of the state because I didn't pay tax on my Bitcoin gains. Okay. Another question. Lee Marandino, are you looking to convert your small business owners to C-Corps now because of new tax law? So when Trump made the tax reform, he reduced the corporate tax from, I think, 35% to 21% on C corporations. Now, that was a good thing because over the years, we became less and less competitive on all of our major corporations, like Apple, for example, went overseas and had their headquarters there because they got better tax treatment. So that's part of the reason why a lot of these companies are coming back and building facilities here, because now we have a much more fair tax code. So the question that Lee asks is, well, if that's 21% and I pay an average rate of 37%, shouldn't I put the business through there and just pay 21%? That's true. But if I take money out of that company, it's going to come out to me as wages usually, and I still have to pay my rate. The reason why a C Corp is good now is if you have a place, if you have a business that is accumulating a lot of cash over time, I want to put it in the C Corp, pay the 21% if it's lower than my average rate, right? And let that build up over time. And I'm saving all of that difference in tax rate almost as if it's a return on investment. Sometimes that could be very high. So I hope that answered your question. Nick Zinner says, I was told instead of an LLC for my assignment business, I should do an S Corp. I do have a partner in this business. We are 50-50, doing extremely well. And we went and we want to go into paying ourselves a salary. Okay. So first of all, if you're an LLC, you can pay yourself a salary, even though technically you're not supposed to. A lot of my LLC owners do that. So they have their withholdings taken care of. So the reason why people think doing an S-Corp's better is really partly to evade taxes. I have a very good podcast on this, which I could send you the link for. And if you look in the link in description, you'll see all my contact information. So what's the difference? Let's say I have $100,000 in an LLC income and Nick is a sole proprietor. So the self-employment tax or FICA on that is 15.3%. Now, people that work for someone pay the FICA, but it's 7.65%. Everyone that works for someone, you'll see Social Security and Medicare. Those total 7.65%. The employer pays the other half. But when you're self-employed like me and Nick, you have to pay 100% of it. So in this case, let's say Nick took the $100,000 and he put it into an S corporation. Now, the only way to get money out of an S corporation is by paying yourself wages or taking a dividend or distribution. The S corp doesn't have a tax. So what accountants try to do is say, okay, let's take $50,000 as wages from the S corp and $50,000 as a dividend or a distribution. That way, only $50,000 is subject to the 15.3%, and I'm saving a lot of money. But what company gets a dividend of 50%? So you have to be very, very careful that an S corp, we can do that slightly, but there's reasonableness and compensation rules. If the IRS looks at you, they'll say, Nick, you're making $100,000. You're not earning $50,000 and paying yourself a dividend. So you got to be careful with that. It's sometimes not worth it because think about it. If I have an LLC, I don't need to do payroll. I can pay estimates. So I'm saving payroll fees. Your year end is cheaper because your S corp has to be done. Then that's more money. So some of these expenses that you're saving chip away at what is the benefits of the S corp and trying to evade those taxes. Okay. So that's a good question. Anthony Love says, should W-2 earners try and move to a 1099 to an LLC to get the QBI deduction? Very good question I get all the time. So we have, would you turn that down one or two for me? Thank you. So what this question stems from, let's say you're a W-2 person, you're working as a software engineer and you're making $100,000 again. And so you have W-2, we just talked about, you have your normal deductions, your FICA. But what happens if someone comes to work next to you? Can you imagine they're making $100,000, but when they do their taxes at the end of the year, they're getting a qualified business income deduction, which Trump invented. So they're only paying tax on $80,000. So anyone who doesn't have a tremendous amount of benefits and would still have job security should really call me to discuss converting themselves from a W-2 to an LLC, because the tax savings plus other retirement kind of benefits you can benefit from are really tremendous, to quote my brother. So I hope that answers that question, Anthony. So is it better to have college savings accounts in your child's name? When you do the FAFSA, they're going to ask especially for all the assets of both the potential student and the caregiver or the parent. So I hope, Catherine, that answers your question. And Nick, you're very, very welcome. Jim, how would a small business start a defined benefit plan? What are the advantages to this type of plan compared to a 401k plan? Well, don't forget that a 401k plan, a lot of people have these at work, and they can put in a certain amount of money up to about $18,000 or $19,000. Sometimes they have a match, and that's a nice benefit. When you're self-employed, you can also do the same thing, but there are limits there. What Jim here was asking about is a defined benefit plan. So if you're self-employed like I am, you can have a defined benefit plan, which is a very, very aggressive, high savings plan that a lot of the larger companies and executives have. So it all depends on how much money you're making. When I have a small business, If they're making a certain amount of money, they can do a SEP IRA and put away about $55,000. But as you make more than those limits of income over $200,000 or $300,000, it's worth it to set up a real plan for yourself, because we can take a lot higher deduction. That's the benefit. If you make the income, we want to save it. And the best thing about it is that it's fully deductible right now. So imagine I make $600,000 and I could put away $200,000. I can take that immediately when I'm younger now, making money at a higher rate. Let's say I'm in the 37% bracket. So I'm going to be over $70,000 of tax savings for putting away $200,000. So as you can see, that I'm really only spending $130,000 to put away $200,000. So all I urge everyone, even with an IRA, a SEP IRA, a 401k, or a defined benefit, they all work that way. Especially small business people, you should be saving every month to put something into a SEP IRA, because you're going to save your tax effective tax rate on that money. If there's no better investment, there's no better instant return on investment. Jim, will the upcoming election have an implication for tax planning in the future? Well, I think if the Democrats get in, they're going to want to repeal all these great changes that Trump did, just out of spite. But I don't know. So I think if Trump continues, there's going to be even more tax cuts, more deregulation, which has helped my clients already. So if the Democrats get in office, just be prepared that, you know, that we're all, you know, we're going to be Venezuela in probably 2 or 3 years. So, and I won't be living here. So, hope that answered your question. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Jim. I'm going to move on to my list of questions. The pre-questions, I call them ahead of time. I want everyone to remember the medical deduction is limited to 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. So let me explain. Let me go back to our $100,000 example. You're a family, you make $100,000. The first $7,500 of medical bills are not deductible. So some people don't keep track of that. But in New Jersey, the threshold is much lower. It's 2%. So you always want to keep track of all your charity as well as your medical. The medical especially, even if you don't get it for federal, we can still save money in New Jersey, and Jersey is still a very high tax state. And I want to talk about the solar credit. The solar credit impacts solar systems, solar energy systems. You can have on investment properties, and you can have in your home. Now, that credit's been substantial. So, for example, it was 30% in 2019 of the gross amount paid. That's going down to 26% in 2020 and down to 22% in 2021. So if you're thinking about doing a solar energy product in your home or investment property, you really want to do it this year if you can, because you're going to be losing 4% of real tax credit dollars. These are real dollars you can get. So it's, but you still want to negotiate the price. Remember, the solar companies come in and they give you a price, and they know you're getting this large deduction or tax credit. And don't forget, you can negotiate anything. And if you wanted to learn how to negotiate, my brother Jim is probably the best person to learn negotiation from. Okay. I want to talk about a little bit about a real estate investment versus a stock investment. And I get this question all the time, and realtors who are listening to this now or will listen to it later, you should be prepared to answer this question. People come in my office all the time and say, Chris, I inherited $200,000. What should I do with it? Well, they could put it in a mattress, they could put it in Fidelity Investments, or they could buy a rental property. But no real estate agents I talk to can talk with confidence about why what they sell is better than something else, and that troubles me. So I do a lot of presentations with realtors and lawyers and other people in the real estate industry to explain to them how they can sell this with confidence. So the first thing we want to talk about is that there's a difference, is that in my seminars, I talk about, everyone remembers Evel Knievel. Now, Evel Knievel was a stuntman. He drove a Harley Davidson motorcycle over Caesar's Palace fountains, over buses, over cars, and he got insurance. Evel Knievel, who rode a stock Harley Davidson, got insurance on his body. So I think that's pretty interesting. I couldn't believe it that he got insurance. But then when I talk to investment advisors, I say, well, can I get insurance on my Google investment or my Facebook? You're selling this to me. If it's a real asset, right? If it's a real asset, a car, Evel Knievel got insurance. So they tell me I can't get insured. I start to think they're not real assets, right? It's more like Atlantic City. It's a lot of guessing goes on. So that's why it's one of the main things about investment properties. I can insure it against loss. Think about this too, that the, thank you, Martha. Welcome to the chat. So we have a real estate investment has a very low volatility. The value doesn't come and go. There's no crashes or corrections. Suddenly we can compare our townhouse we just bought to many others that are very similar. You can't do that with stocks. You also have no control over your stock investment, right? You can't really control the value of Google, but if you own a property, you have a lot to say about how much it's worth and how it's presented. So, being an investor in real estate has been demonized for a long time. And, that's because the big investment houses don't make money on it. So of course they want to tell you it's Animal House for the past 60 years when it's not. We do a lot of real estate here. We do a lot of investability analysis for people on commercial property and residential property to really give them a great idea scientifically. How do we go about making this a great success? In the long run, there's no better financial bet, especially for positive cash flow in the future, than investment property. And I'll give you this example. Let's say that we're 15 years in the future with my example. I have 200,000 of Google. I bought it today, 15 years ago, and I bought four investment properties at 50,000 down each, a total of 800,000 of real estate. In 15 years, even with a small percentage increase on my real estate and 10% to Google, my Google's only worth about 850,000. My rental properties are worth 1.2 million and they're paid off. Someone else paid them off. You can't beat that return on investment. Right? I got a $1.2 million investment after 15 years, only putting $200,000 down. So that's one thing. Now at year 16, when my house is paid off, the rental properties, I want to start drawing money. Now I can take $1,000 a month out of each of those properties, and that's profit to me now that the mortgages are paid off. If I want to take money out of Google, I need to sell it. So if I want to get the $48,000 or $4,000 a month, I might need to sell $65,000 of Google. So I have a house now that's going to give me an infinite cash flow. And if I need to match that with Google, which is not worth as much as a house would be. So there's no doubt done right. Real estate beats the stock market every time. I've never met an investment advisor who I've debated with. They start out very, very confident. In about 10 minutes, they're looking at their notes and then they go home. So any advisor that wants to debate me about this topic, I'd love to do a live stream on that. Okay. Okay. So Martha, thank you. Martha has a question. How can depreciation recapture impact on a long-term real estate investment? Well, what you have is if you all have a real estate investment for say 10 or 15 years, as we just talked about, good segue. Thank you, Martha, that you've had depreciation on it. And you've taken that depreciation, that reduces the basis in the property. So let's say I have bought $1 million property 10 years ago, and I took $50,000 a year depreciation. It brings me to a basis of $50,000. Let's say I sell that for $2 million. So I don't have $1 million gain. I know I bought it for $1 million, but depreciation reduces your basis, right? So I have a $1.5 million gain. And in this case, it'd be a long-term gain, but which we hope would be at lower rates, right? Capital gains rates are capped at 20% right now. That sounds great. But when I've taken that depreciation before, the $500,000, I've gotten that benefit at my normal rates. I've gotten that deduction. So that $500,000 might be in play as part of that $1.5 million gain that I need to pay ordinary rates on that and not the capital gains rates. Martha, did I answer your question? I hope it did. Yes, Martha. Thanks, Martha. Martha's in the chat room. All right. All right. Just going to look at my notes. Give me 1 second. Evil Knievel. I want to go back a little bit because I know I have a lot of people interested in real estate about an investability analysis. So if you want to look, okay, great. Well, the new, this is a good question. Martha chimed in another question. The new tax laws, all of these changes and limits that I just talked about for the past few minutes, the state and local tax deductions don't impact the real estate investments. So I can take more than $10,000 in real estate taxes on an investment property. Very important question. Thank you. It does not impact it at all. It only impacts personal taxes paid and taken on a Schedule A. I want to talk about an investability analysis, and I talk about this a lot in real estate seminars I do, and just in general. So how do we analyze if a property is good to invest in? I see a townhouse for sale, and I have some money, and how do I know? Well, the first thing and most important thing that you need to do is you need to find out, usually from a realtor, what is the fair market value rent for that unit or that townhouse or that home, because everything is driven by that. Okay. And if the fair market value rent is too low, that could skew the numbers so much that you need to put too much down. So it's very important. So we want to do is what my quick procedure is when I buy an investment property or I do it for a client, we always want to do it using a 15-year mortgage. My goal is to get it paid off in 15 years, breaking even on my taxes, and have it open for positive cash flow in 15 years. So that's very important to impart to you, that we don't want a 30-year loan. And so we want to analyze it. We're going to have our maybe HOA fees. We're going to have some property tax expense, and then we're going to have a mortgage payment. And so we need all of that to be paid 100% every month by the tenant. So it's very important that's why the fair market value rent is so important. If it's too low, then my mortgage payment has to be lower as a component of my monthly costs. And that might mean bigger down payment, which I don't want to do. The banks would require about 30% down on an investment property. So if you could be within the 28 to 35% range when we work on this investability analysis. And again, I urge all realtors watching now or after the live stream on YouTube is, are you prepared to tell a client why real estate investing is better? And if they come to you for this analysis, could you really sit with them? And if not, you can call me and I can show you how to do it. I do a lot of training for realtors on these subjects so they can give themselves a whole new profit center. So Martha, did that affect Anthony Love? What's your thoughts on Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax proposal? That's a good question. I'm a big follower of Richard Wolff. He's an economist, Harvard kind of guy, but he's very socialist and Marxist, but he's brilliant. And I'm always commenting on how he skews the facts. So the Elizabeth Warren wealth tax, it really wants to say that people over a certain amount of value or of assets would get a percentage of those taxed, let's say 2%. So let's say I'm worth $100 million. I might get a $2 million tax on that. Now, that, of course, isn't fair because it's been taxed already. So that's a double taxation right there. That's completely unfair and unconstitutional, I believe. So that's number one. Number two is that they try to equate this. This is what you're going to see in the news a lot. And I've been writing to Dr. Wolf, and I think I'm going to do a response video to one of his videos because he's very popular. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to equate property taxes we pay on our homes to this wealth tax of value of assets we've accumulated. And they say, well, listen, we're taxing property, but it's not the same thing. I'm getting direct benefits and services for what I'm paying. I'm getting schools, I'm getting police, I'm getting fire. So it's a much more direct link to what I'm paying, that I'm getting services. If I wasn't getting any services in a town, I'm not paying them any property taxes. That's what I pay for. So really, like most taxes, Elizabeth Warren's is coerced charity, right? Most taxes are charity. What is charity? It's me giving some money or good to somebody, never expecting it to be paid back, for them to better themselves. That's charity, and it should be voluntary. So our tax system takes my money, takes your money, and gives it to other people against our will, and gives it to them for their benefit, and they'll never have to pay it back. So that's charity, but it's coerced charity because it's, you know, it's under penalty of going to prison. All right. So I hope that answered that question, Anthony. Javier Navarro, I want to become a CPA, but none of my supervisors are CPAs themselves to confirm my hours worked. Well, Javier, I hope I'm saying your name correctly. Well, we need to move to a position where you have CPA supervisors. That's what you need to move as soon as possible. Because you're getting great experience. Well, take that experience, get a resume together, and go find a CPA to work for. Even if you're in a position of taking a cut in pay, getting those hours in and getting that license can catapult you to great things. If I didn't have a CPA after my name, I probably wouldn't be doing as good as I am, because rightfully so, people think a CPA is better credentialed than other people, and it's true. Another question from James. Should you take Social Security as soon as it's available to you? Now, Social Security, depending on when you take it from, say, 62 to 66, the amount that you have available to you is going to go up. The longer you wait, the more money you make. So it's usually a question, first is about your health. How healthy are you? If you feel you might not make it to 70, then I'm taking it as soon as possible. It's also about your income, because Social Security can be taxable up to 85%. So my advice is usually, if you're still working or still don't need the money, I want to push it off, because that incremental bump on a monthly basis, every month I wait, if I'm going to live a longer time, is going to dwarf the amount that if I were to take it earlier. So that's the answer. It's, you have to really examine it. But most times, most clients, if they can afford to live without it, I tell them to wait if they feel they're going to live past 75. Sometimes that's the cutoff point. Jim, I hope that answered your question, but I don't think you're close to retirement. Next topic. So please, anyone jump in with a topic. That's why I'm here, to answer your questions. I want to talk a little bit about home office deduction for self-employed people. Can I deduct the cost of evicting a bad tenant? Of course you can. That's completely rental property related. Javier, great. When's your next chat with Sticks? I'm talking to him right now. We're looking to do another tax and business update. We're going to be, he recently got married. Javier's talking about Sticks Hex and Hammer 666. He's a very popular YouTuber. He's had me on a couple of times with some long interviews, which is fantastic. And so we're looking to do another one pre-Thanksgiving. He did just recently get married and was traveling. I know that. But if anyone, please, you should definitely subscribe to Sticks Hex and Hammer 666 channel. He's again a fantastic analyst, historian. He's the best person at dissecting the daily news. He's one of, and also the Black Conservative Patriot, BCP. You also want to subscribe to him. Both of those people together give me all my news analysis I need for the whole day. At the end of the day, I look for their streams, and Tim Pool's pretty good too. Okay, Alpha Sigma, 1914. I'm in an accounting master's degree program currently. Should I prep for the CPA exam now? When do you think you're going to sit for the exam, Alpha? Just before he answers, when I sat for the CPA exam, 2020. What, in May or any other month? You want to start studying 6 months prior, at least. I studied for all four parts at the time, but that was back in the old days when we had dinosaurs and we took the test with pencils. But if you plan to take at least two parts, you want to study for at least 6 months. Yeah. So you want to start now. There's no, and my advice, so I get a lot of questions from CPA candidates. You really want to study and take a review class if you can. And you want to continually study what you don't know. You want to keep track of what you don't know all the time until you know all of it. I had cassette tapes in the car that I would listen to and re-record every day on each of the topics of the exam. Hope that answered your question. I took the Becker CPA review class. Jim Whalen, is it more profitable to rent a second home to my property or charge my business a cost and use it as an office space? Well, if you're, if in the first example, you're getting money from someone else. So if all the numbers are the same, Jim, let's say it's $2,000 a month. If I can get that from a third party, then I'm only paying the tax on that. In your case, you're basically, you're charging your business, but it's your money. So you're still, you're losing the greatest share of it. If you think about it. In Jim's example, he has a home, let's say he's going to rent. He could rent to a third party who wants to come in and lease it as an office. Let's say it's $2,000 a month. Well, Jim will get that. And let's say he's a 30% tax rate. Well, he'll pay $600 on that. He'll net $1,400. If Jim rents it from his own business, so he's paying it out of his business $2,000, he gets to take it as a deduction, but then he has to pick it up as income. So he's really only saving the tax. So in that case, he's losing $800 because he's only saving the tax of $800 in the second example, and he's saving the $1,400. He's earning the $1,400 in the first example. Alpha, you're welcome. And Alpha, if you have a minute, you can write to me anytime. I put my email in the description down below. Any questions you have, studying for the exam, I'm always here for you and any CPA candidate who's listening right now. All right. I want to talk about some basic accounting for business owners. This is important to remember. That I get this question all the time. You want to retain your records for at least 7 years. Now, those are records that we've used for business and a deduction and support or income. If you have a bill at home that you've paid and you have a record of it, you can shred that. You know, if you don't use your home internet for anything for business, I don't need to keep them for 7 years. But any business deduction that you have, you want to keep for the receipt or the bank statement at least 7 years. And let me talk a little bit about canceled checks. People don't write as many checks as they can anymore as they used to, but a lot of banks aren't giving them to you anymore. When you do write them, you need to get your canceled checks at the end of the month. That if you have an IRS audit, the check is the valid support for that expense. So if I pay my Verizon bill with a check, even if I show the IRS my Verizon bill, they want to see the canceled check. So if you have a bank right now that says, oh, we keep them in the cloud, it's going to be okay, it's in a vault, you want to get a bank statement every month and download that bank statement. It has all your activity and it has your check images on the white sheets, they're called. So make sure you're getting your check, your canceled checks, no matter how few of them you do. Yes, there's no charge for this. that was very funny. Again, so let's talk about the home office deduction. One or two more topics. I got some questions coming in via email. So the home office deduction, if you work out of your house, any realtor listening to this, any realtor, you have to have a home office deduction. That's your main base of business. And if you're not taking it or your account's not taking it, you're losing a lot of money. Please write to me. I'll tell you all about the home office deduction. It's very simple. It does not cause an audit. That's been the biggest propaganda for some reason, the biggest myth. The home office deduction does not cause an audit at all. And remember, any expense you have for business we have support for, we should take. Even under audit, we're going to give the IRS the support. Remember, everyone thinks the IRS is after money when that's not true. The IRS does have a Tony Soprano collection division. But all of the agents and everyone working there just want compliance. I work on audits and agents come in. If we can give them all the support, they have no change gladly. They're not searching for money. They would love to get folders off their desk. That's why having the right accountant, having the right support system, in case there is an audit, we answer it quickly and it goes away. Let's talk about mileage. Very important. Let's talk about mileage logs a little bit. So remember, whether you lease a car or buy a car, your business miles deduction, your expense has to come from your real mileage. So you have to keep a log, even if you lease a car or if you buy a car, or if you use actual expenses or the mileage method. All right. So I get that question very often. Another question. Is the home office deduction based on the square footage of the space used? Yes, 100%. So I have a 2,000 square foot house. I use 200 square feet. I have a 10% use of business use. So what we want to do is get all of the expenses for that house, all of them, 100%. Maintenance and lawn cutting and everything you can think of, utilities. And we do a special schedule to take a part of those expenses on the tax return. All right. I think we're almost done. One more thing I want to say about gifts. People think that if you give gifts in business, they're limited to $25 per person per year. But we really don't give gifts. A gift is something I give to one of my daughters on Christmas morning to see the joy in their heart and eyes when they open it. So everything we're doing in business is marketing and advertising. So if a realtor gives a new homeowner a Home Depot gift card for $25, they're only giving that because they think there might be business coming in the future. If they knew it would not get them any business, they wouldn't do it. So that's not a gift. So try to recharacterize what you're paying as marketing or advertising. All right, another question. Are those companies that advertise selling your IRS debts for pennies legitimate? This is a very good one. There's a lot of radio ads about, like, from Optima and other companies that say, oh, you have $10,000 in tax debt. We're going to get you out of that tax debt and for pennies on the dollar. And 99% of the time, this is untrue and impossible. But the IRS, if you have the ability to pay, the IRS will wait forever. They're not going to reduce tax interest or penalties, unless you're indigent. I have some older people or disabled people that can happen with. So don't believe that at all. Call me first. These people want to play on your fear and take a $10,000 retainer only to find 6 months from then. They say, we couldn't do the offer and compromise to get your tax reduced. Oh, but we got you on a payment plan, which we could have done for a few hours of time. So those radio ads are not correct. They give you false hope. And I meet with these poor people that come in here all the time that were bilked by these people. And they have you sign such harsh contracts. There's nothing you can do. That was a good question, Anthony. Thank you. Maybe one more. See what else. All right. Yes, Martha, great question. People always are asking me, or they're telling me they didn't keep track of all their donations because they can't get a receipt for everything. And that doesn't matter. You should keep track of every donation you give. You can't get a receipt. Girl Scout cookies, you go to church, keep track of it. Remember, most people don't always keep track of their non-cash contributions, which is a very good deduction. So if you give anything away, keep track of it. A bag of clothes, you give away property, you give away furniture. Some of those are worth some money, and people are giving away more than they think. So keep track of all that in a spreadsheet so we can take the non-cash deduction. Javier, yes, my undergrad education, was my bachelor's was in accounting, and then you needed that in order to sit for the CPA exam or a certain amount of credits in accounting. Great. All right. Well, it's been about an hour. Everyone's been very patient. I hope you all found this informative. My information's down below. If no one has another question, I'm going to end the stream. And I thank everyone who came to this live stream and also who's listening to it later. I really appreciate it. I'll just wait another second if there's another question. Oh, you're very welcome. And I'll let you know about the next one. And everyone, if you can let me know, write to me and let me know if you thought this was beneficial. A lot of people have been asking me to do this for a while. So I think hopefully we'll start to build a momentum and get more and more subscribers to it. Javier, if your boss's boss, it's possible you need to talk to them about what they'll do for you, right? If there's certain paperwork they need to fill out and who's directly supervising you. And you have to see if they will write that up that way. So it's more a conversation to have with them and see if they will put it down that way. I really can't answer that question, but you should talk to them first tomorrow. Okay. All right. Any other questions? If not, I'm going to sign off. Again, my information's down below in the description and the link to my website. Any other questions, you can email me or right on my website, the main page, you'll see Ask Me a Tax Question. And I usually get back to people very quickly. Thank you so much for joining in the live stream, and I'll talk to you all soon.